The date is July 11th, 2018. I'm here with Ms. Barbara Brayboy for an oral history interview for the Stories to Save Lives project. Thank you for sitting with me today, Ms. Brayboy.
Not a problem. Thank you for inviting me.
To start off, could you tell me a bit about where you grew up?
I grew up in a little village in Halifax County, North Carolina, known as Essex at that time. Right now, there was a post office there, but later years it was changed, or the address was changed to Hollister, so it is known as Hollister now. But the little village itself was Essex, okay. Halifax County.
And did you know your grandparents?
I knew my mother's parents. They were farmers, very active in the community.
Sure.
Okay. My grandfather's name was Lamar Lynch. He was a farmer, very active in the community, active in his church. He was a deacon in his church. He lived to be 95 years old. My grandmother was, of course, his wife, and she lived, she had a short life. She lived only like 66 years. But she was quite active, a great homemaker, a great cook. I always looked forward to going to Grandma and Grandpa's house to eat. They had seven children, of which my mom was the oldest. There were five girls and two boys. And at this time, they're all deceased. My mom being the oldest, she lived to be 98 years old. She became deceased in June 24th, 2008.
Okay. And were these grandparents also in Essex?
Yes, they were.
And what was life like in Essex?
Life in Essex, everybody was farmers.
Okay.
My mom and dad owned a 45, 50-acre farm. And where my mom and dad lived, it was a more or less of a family plantation. My grandfather, who was deceased, he left land to, he had two sets of children. He left land to the older children and land to the three younger boys, of which my dad was one of those boys. So we lived on the farm, and of course it was divided, and each child knew where his or her property was.
Okay. Uh-huh. What kind of stuff did they grow?
Oh my gosh. They grew everything. Everybody in the neighborhood grew everything. They grew all of the meat, the vegetables. My mother, in the summertime, her garden, mom and dad's garden, must have been an acre, acre and a half, because I'm one of eight children.
Okay.
I'm number seven of eight children. And they grew everything that we ate. Mom did canning. At that time, when I was a child, mom and dad did not have a freezer. So my mother and my older sisters, they put everything in jars.
Wow.
And she would can enough during the summer months that whatever we needed during the winter months or early spring, it was just the staples, the sugar, the flour, the meal, those kinds of things that mom and dad would have to buy from the grocery store.
Okay.
And at that time, the little grocery store, they were not the big grocery stores as we have today. It was a little country store that had everything in it from sugar, flour, whatever. It was a gas station, get your gas there. Even there was a department for to buy fabric to make children's clothes, shoes, I mean everything, their men's clothing, everything was at that little country grocery store.
Okay. Oh, would you say Essex was a close-knit community?
Oh my gosh, yes. Essex was a very close-knit community. And the thing about it, Essex itself was made up of basically two races of people. There were maybe five or six families that were white, and everybody else was Indian. Everybody else looked like me. I look, and we didn't have to. Parents didn't have to worry about children being kidnapped. We didn't have to worry about guns. You know, wherever we were, we knew that there was going to be an adult to take care of us. As a matter of fact, my daddy lived on one side of the road and his brother, older brother, lived on the other side of the road. And there was a little hill between the two homes where I lived and where my uncle and his family lived. And there were many times he had a daughter, my uncle had a daughter very close to my age. There was a tree, shade tree, about midway between our houses. And I can remember my cousin and I being under the shade tree playing playhouse dolls or whatever we wanted to play, hopscotch. Mom could see us from, and Dad could see us from our that side. My uncle and his wife could see us from the other side. So, you know, there was never any fear of anything happening in our community. And my brother, 2 years younger than me, he and my cousin's brother, they basically did the same thing. Of course, they were riding bikes up and down the path, as we called it, to the house. But we never had to fear about anything like that when we were growing up.
That sounds nice.
It was awesome. And I only wish children felt as safe today as I felt as I was growing up.
Mm. What would people do for healthcare at the time in Essex, in your community?
Well, you know what? Healthcare was not a big issue. Very seldom. When people died, it was usually from old age. I don't remember as a child anybody actually getting killed from an accident in my community. The one person that I can remember, when it comes to healthcare, I can remember one person that I attended church with, which was an older lady. I remember hearing my mom and say that this particular lady had her breast removed. And that is the only really, really time that I can remember, you know, an illness like that. Mm-hmm. Of course, there were people who had my grandmother that I talked about earlier. She died from a heart attack, and she was a very heavy lady. But most people lived to be a fairly good age. I don't remember a lot of sicknesses and health. One thing, people got their exercises from working on the farm. Mm-hmm. You know, if we ate like heavy meals, you know, in the morning we always had a good breakfast, come to the house, Mama had cooked lunch for us, known as dinner at that time, and ate a big meal. After an hour or so of rest, we'd go back to the field, and it was just hard labor, you mm-hmm. know, so there was not a whole lot of I would call stored fat that we did not work off. But I don't remember a lot of illnesses growing up.
That's good. Mm-hmm. How would y'all handle minor stuff like colds and sore throats?
Colds and home remedies.
Could you describe some of those?
One of the things that they gave us as a for cold was always castor oil or black draw. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
Castor oil.
But the black draw was, and that's D-R-A-U-G-H-T. It was a powder. They would mix it with a little bit of sugar or something because we took it dry and then we drank something after it. But Mom and Dad will always say you take the castor oil or the black draw and it will get rid of all the cold that's inside you, you know, it would eliminate it through our elimination system. So, you know, as a matter of fact, I remember staying home from school one time as a during my 12 years of school, and that was my senior year. I had the flu, and I couldn't go to school because of the flu, because the aches, the pains, and the throwing up and whatever. And I went to the doctor. Mom and Dad took me to the doctor. Of course, I got penicillin for that. And after a day or so, I was back in school. But that is the only time I ever missed school for being sick.
Okay. Do you remember the doctor you went to, what that was?
Yes, Dr. I forget his first name, but his last name was Woodburn. Okay. And he lived in Littleton, North Carolina. It was about 15 miles from where Mom and Dad lived. He was the family doctor.
I see.
And you didn't have to make an appointment. You just go in and wait your turn, and he would eventually get around to you.
That sounds nice.
And he took care of everybody in my neighborhood. There were two doctors in Littleton. One was called Dr. Palmer, and one was Dr. Woodburn. And if you didn't go to one, you went to the other one.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk about growing up in your childhood home in particular? What was your day-to-day practice like? I know you mentioned working on the farm. Yeah. Was there other stuff you had to do?
Day-to-day, there were chores to be done. You know, I went, of course, in school. I don't remember a whole lot from the time I was born until going to school. I just know I played a lot. And one of the things that I remember my mom telling me, and my mom and dad telling me, that they knew that I would have something to do with children when I got older, because as a child, I would line my dolls up and I would teach my dolls. So they told me, I knew you were going to have something to do with education, and I turned out to be a teacher. So, but growing up, as a kid, I know I played a lot. My sister, who's older than me, she's 4 years, 5 years older than me. In the summertime, we had our little playhouse out in the grapevine. After working on the farm, we always found time to play in the playhouse. But day to day, after school, come home from school, there were chores to be done. Mom and Dad had a wood heater to heat the house. And so it was my chore and my younger brother's chore to make sure there was wood on the porch to keep us warm during the night. Growing up, I never did, with four older sisters and mom, I did not learn to cook. I did not learn to cook until after I was married, because with four sisters and a mom in the kitchen, they didn't have space for little Barbara.
Right.
So the two things that I learned to do very well, can make a beautiful bed, and I know how to sweep the floor very, very good. They were the things that I had to do, because mm-hmm. the others did the cooking and the cleaning, the kitchen and that kind of thing.
So. Okay. Could you talk about the work you've done since leaving school?
Yes. High school or
college?
College, okay. After college, I was hired here in Warren County. My degree from UNC Pembroke, which is at that time was called Pembroke State College,
okay.
Later called Pembroke State University, now of course UNC Pembroke. I graduated from there in 1965, and with a BS in elementary education. And I had spent my first 2 years in education teaching at the Hollowa School in the Hollister area. And my first class, it was a fifth grade class. It was a classroom of 36 children. And how I managed that, as I look back today, I'm not sure how I did it, but it's unthinkable to do to put 36 children in a classroom today. But I taught there 1 year, and then I got married, and my husband became a teacher there as well. And after, in May of 1967, we moved to Pennsylvania, Westchester, Pennsylvania, because he was pursuing his degree in health and PE. He wanted his master's in health and PE. So we moved there in 67 and stayed there until 75. We were purchasing land during that time. We were purchasing land where I now live from my brother. And in 1975, we decided it was that we were going to move back to North Carolina, and we both were still teachers. And we had, at that time, we had two children. When we moved here, Jennifer was 5 years old, and we had a little girl, Heather, 9 years old at that time. Not nine, 9 months old at that time. So,
okay.
And then 2 years later, we had a third daughter. Her name's Natalie. So.
Okay. And so you arrived back in North Carolina and came to live in Warren County.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk about the differences, if there are any, between where you grew up in Essex and Warrenton and Warren County?
Well, in rural Warren County, where I live, when I first moved there, it was basically just like it was when I, the area where I grew up in Halifax County in Essex. But over the years, you know, there were basically native people who lived there. But I would say in the last 15 years, maybe 10 to 15 years, we've had more diverse people to move in the community. All the people were still farmers. Very few did public work outside the home. They were basically farmers. As a matter of fact, the property that my husband and I owned, we rented our land out to a big farmer in the Arcola area, which is no 2 or 3 miles from where I live, for tobacco. So, you know, but everybody, it was basically the same. But, you know, in the last 10 to 15 years, I've noticed that there are more diverse people in my community.
Okay. And historically, the Halawa people spread across Halifax and Warren County.
Exactly. Right? That's where the name comes from. Halawa is made up from Halifax and Warren County.
I see. Mm-hmm.
That's where the name comes from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so what is it like living here today? How would you describe it to someone who has never lived in?
It's a very rural area.
Okay.
But I feel safe. I feel comfortable. In my immediate neighborhood, people are basically quiet. They mind their own business. At one time when we first moved back, there were lots of children in the community. My children, my nieces and nephews, and cousins, they all lived in the area just like they did in Halifax County. But there was really not a whole lot of difference in the two areas in which I have lived.
Would you say that your community is healthy?
Ooh. Maybe yes, no. I know that among the Halawa people, I know that there are a lot of diabetics.
Okay.
I'm not so sure that they exercise. I am one who tried to get exercise into every day. I try to walk at least 2 miles a day, if not more. I work in my yard quite a bit, you know, and many times I'll go to the Y in Rocky Mount to get more diverse exercises. But I think probably diabetics in my community is an issue, and there are lots of people who suffer from arthritis, rheumatism, because I had a sister in January who passed away from rheumatoid arthritis.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. I think being a diabetic, of course, there's lots of alcohol in my area too. I don't know. I have been told that there are drugs. I have not seen drugs, but I've told that there are some in the area. But I think the diabetics situation is probably worse in our area.
And how are people taking care of that?
They are getting medical attention, you know, through the insulin, monitoring their diets, and those kinds of things. Because my husband was a diabetic, and he, before he passed away, he was on insulin, and of course with diabetics that affects your kidneys as well. And he had a kidney transplant in October of 2007, and our daughter Jennifer was his donor. All three of our girls were prospects, and they all qualified. But among the three of them, they decided which one would be their dad's donor. So that worked really well for him for several years. And prior to that, he had had five bypasses. And with the bypass and the kidney medication, and being a diabetic, he was taking like a handful of medicine 3 or 4 times a day. Mm-hmm. And with all the medication, it overpowered his heart, and he passed away in December of 2009.
Okay.
But to answer your question, I think people are taking through their medications, and some of them are exercising and monitoring their diets. I think that's the basic things that they are doing to control that.
And what resources would you say your community has, just, you know, public resources or healthcare to tackle these issues like diabetes and alcoholism?
For the diabetes, there is a rural health center within a couple of miles of my home. Many of the people go there, and there are some who go to their private physicians. But there are some resources, and there are some who are receiving in-home care to help them with their health issues.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you know the different healthcare providers in your community? Like when you were growing up, you mentioned Dr. Woodburn.
Woodburn.
Do you think folks have relationships like that today with their...
with their physician?
Mm-hmm.
No.
No.
No. When, you know, growing up, my mom went to the doctor, you know, the doctor sit and talk to her, well, this is what's going on and this is how we can correct it or make it right. I find now that even when I go for my regular checkup, you know, they come in with their computer, they don't look at you, they just continually asking you question and typing the whole time. So I don't think it's as personal as it was as I remember as a child.
Okay. And why do you think it's changed in that way?
Technology, for one thing. Okay. I think it's a big part of it. I don't know. I really don't know.
That's interesting. I did an interview a couple of days ago, I think, now, and someone mentioned the computer to me in that same way, and I hadn't thought about it because I'm so used to it, you know.
Yeah, you know, they come in and they ask you how you're doing, and even when we tell them how we're doing, you know, there's no eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they take your blood pressure, your heart rate, and, you know, ask you, you have any questions, are you still taking these medications, and, you know, you're out and gone, so...
Mm-hmm. The next set of questions are individual questions about your own health, and if you don't feel comfortable answering,
I'll answer all that I can.
Okay, thank you. Now, the first one is, how would you describe your own health?
I think I have good health. I can basically do anything that I need and want to do. However, in 2014, I had a shoulder replacement. The doctor just said I had worn my shoulder out, so I had to put a metal plate put in my shoulder. And in 2017, it had become dislocated.
Okay.
So again, it came apart, and I had a second surgery in last summer. And so other than that, I have, I really think I have good health. I don't have to have anyone to help me with my chores or my meals, preparing meals or whatever. I drive wherever I need to go, I want to go. The only thing I don't do, and it's because my daughter who lives near me wants to do it, she cuts my grass, and
okay.
that's it.
Good. Glad to hear that. What do you do when you don't feel well?
What do I do when I don't feel well? I just rest.
Okay.
If I need, you know, if it's a headache or whatever, I have a home remedy or medication that I can take, I do. But normally I don't have to deal with that.
Okay. When you need to go to the doctor, where do you go?
Rocky Mount.
Rocky Mount.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about a time when you had to take care of someone else?
Yes. My husband, for one, when he, after his health began to fail, he became a wheelchair patient.
Okay.
But even though he was in a wheelchair, he could basically take care of his hygiene needs and those kinds of things. But he was the one that I took care of. There were things that I had to help him with, but he was not totally dependent upon me. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, he was a pastor of our church. He was a pastor of our church, and when he was in a wheelchair, he preached in his wheelchair. So you know, he never gave up. And another person that I had with, my mother's had beginning stages of dementia.
Okay.
And the last 2 years that she lived, it was getting a lot worse. And it got to the place that my sisters and I, who live here along with my brother, it was really too much for us to take care of because, you know, the lifting and whatever we had to do. So she was in a healthcare facility. But we took care of her up until the last 2 years of her health, and basically we bathed her. She could feed herself, mm-hmm. but we basically had to bathe her, and she was used a walker. But the amazing thing about my mom, she died when she was 98. At age 95, she fell and broke her hip.
Okay.
I want you to know that was the fastest healing hip replacement I had ever seen. When she'd go to therapy, the therapist would say, I have never seen anybody at this age who was determined to walk again like this lady. She was a very strong and determined lady.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But my dad passed away at an early age. He was 66. He had a heart issue, so he's been gone many, many years now, but he died at an early age, much too early.
Okay, yeah. And how has health or illness affected your relationships with other people?
I don't think that it has, okay. Other than the fact that, for instance, my sister-in-law lives next door to me. I will often go out to check on her. I go check on her 2 or 3 times a week, or I call when I don't go out physically to see her. I will give her a call to see how she's doing.
Is she ill? Or?
She has arthritis.
Okay.
And she has some issues with her leg, but I will go check on her. And she has beginning stages of dementia, so I make sure that she always has something to eat or whatever when our healthcare worker has left. But I will go out and check on her, and I always encourage her to, Velma, let's go for a walk. Let me help you. What is it that I can help you do? Whatever she needs, I'm next door to her, so she knows that she can always count on me. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the lady I'm talking about will be Quay's grandmother that you're going to interview.
Okay.
And she will probably tell you many, many good memories about her grandfather and her grandmother. Yeah.
Oh, where do you get information about health or illness? Do you, only talk to your doctor to get that information? Do you use the internet or friends?
I use the internet. Mm-hmm. I have several medical books at my house.
Okay.
Especially dealing with different kinds of drugs. When I get a medication that I'm not familiar with, I use the medical book or internet, I want to find out how it's going to affect me. But I use the internet, I research whatever I can find in books or whatever to keep me abreast of health issues, medications, and whatever.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about a time in your life when you felt prepared or perhaps not prepared to deal with an illness or diagnosis? How do you understand that experience now?
I think when I first saw my mother's health going downhill, mm-hmm. I was not ready to accept it. But as I talked with her, her doctor, her healthcare workers, it helped me to understand it, and I did some research as to what was going on in her body and why she was the way she was. But as I say, at first I can't say that I was not ready to accept it. Maybe I didn't want to accept it because my mom was always this strong, determined woman. If she wanted something done, if daddy or one of us couldn't do it, my mom was going to do it. She was going to get it done. So I think that's what I didn't want to accept, that mom could no longer do those kinds of things.
Okay. And do you feel like she was getting adequate care in terms of her health care provider and the facilities she was
I do, because as we visited mom, I know she, when we were keeping our mom, she would stay with me a week. She would stay with my sisters, the same thing, and my brother. And so we took care of mom, whatever her needs were. We made sure that they were met. And when we had to put her in a health care facility, we went at different times so we could actually see, if what was going on.
Okay.
Some people, they just go at a certain time, maybe on Sunday or Saturday or whatever. But with four of us being in the area, of course, five of us were in the area, but my one brother, Quay's grandfather, he was in double amputee, so he could not go as often as we did. But we would go at different times of the day, and somebody went almost every day to check on her, and so we knew what was going on there. So.
Okay.
I never went there and saw her dirty.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot say that I went there and she said she was hungry or whatever. So I think she was getting adequate care.
I'm glad to hear that. Is that a local facility?
Yes, it was in Rocky Mount.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And was it big or small?
It was a Hunter Hill Nursing Home is what it was called. Yeah, it was pretty big.
Okay.
Because they had areas for different kinds of people, for my mom, which was an aging person with dementia. There were people who worked with her. There were people there for rehab. So it was different services and resources that were provided.
Okay, mm-hmm. Lovely. What do you wish your doctor knew about you?
My doctor knew about me? I really don't know, because if I have a health issue, I will discuss it with my doctor. I don't keep any secrets from my doctor, so I don't know how to answer that question,
mm-hmm.
because if it's anything going on with my body that I feel that needs to be discussed with the doctor or a medical person, I do that.
Do you feel like there's something that doctors or just healthcare providers in general need to know or should know about the local Indian community here?
Yes. This doesn't affect my family, but there is a family, there are families in my neighborhood, and it's all with one set of families, should I say, one group of people. They have very red eyes. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, have you? Okay. There's an area of my community that the people, they have all red eyes, and I'm not sure if I should say the name or the last names of the people or not, but it's been researched before. The last names are Ansteds. And most of those people that live in that particular area, they have their eyes are very, very red.
Okay.
And now what causes that, I don't know. I wish there was a way that we could better deal with the alcohol in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there are drugs in the area, even though I've not seen them. I wish, I would love to have resources that we could deal with those kinds of things. And I would love, this doesn't deal with health or medications or anything, but I would also love to see our students focus on education. Well, it's a lot different now than what it used to be. Even 10 years ago, more students are going, graduates are going into going to college or two-year colleges or four-year universities. But I would love to see a larger percentage of our students get their education, whether it's in the field of education or medicine or whatever the area might be. I'd love to see our students more focused on that.
Absolutely. Have you or someone you know had an experience with healthcare that did not go particularly well?
Yes, my younger brother, he was a heavy smoker, but before he passed away, a couple of years before he passed away, he stopped smoking, but I think the damage was done then. But he was sick, and I don't think he really knew he was as sick as he was. Because after he was diagnosed, within 3 to 4 weeks, he had passed away.
Okay.
So that was I only wish that the diagnosis had been earlier, that maybe something could have been done or lengthened his life for a while anyway. But
what do you think was maybe the root cause of him not getting that diagnosis earlier?
I don't know, because he went to every time a doctor, when he went to the doctor, wasn't feeling well or whatever, they would run all kinds of tests, and it was just never diagnosed. He had cancer of the liver.
Okay.
And But it took the longest time for that to be as a matter of fact, I said when it was diagnosed, he was gone like 3 weeks later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there issues that you don't like to talk about with your doctor or your healthcare providers?
No, because I really think that if I have a health issue, they are the people that I need to express my concerns with.
Absolutely.
No, if something's wrong with me, I will let my doctor know, even if I have to pick up the phone and call my doctor, this is going on, what do you think it is? Of course, they don't like to give opinions on the phone, that. And she'll say, Ms. Brayboy, you probably need to come in for whatever reason. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How long have you been with this doctor?
This doctor I have been with since 2000.
Okay, that's quite a while. And it's in Rocky Mount.
In Rocky Mount. Mm-hmm.
What's the office?
Boyce Willis.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a small practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like who you are, your identity, affects the kind of care you get?
Not me personally, because I will ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't give up until I get an answer that I think that is the right answer. But I think there are some people that they don't get the health care or the resources are provided because of who they are. I do feel that way.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your answers. Is there anything else that you think we should talk about or that I need to know that I haven't asked about? I'm wondering now that I'm at the end of the questions, if there's anything you'd like to add about, your career in education.
I spent 43 years in education. I worked, I began teaching in 1965 and I retired in 2008 from a teacher to a curriculum specialist to an assistant principal, and then my last 8 years I served as a principal of a primary school in Scotland Neck, North Carolina.
Okay.
It was an ideal situation. It was a pre-K through second grade school, and I often told my husband, I said, gosh, if heaven was on earth, this would be heaven for me, because I'm a little person's person. I like dealing with the younger kids. And currently, I am very active here in Warren County. I am a school board member, and I have been since 2012. I initially served from 1988 through, I think 96. And I came back on board in 2000 to 2004. And then in 2012, I ran as a write-in candidate, and so I've been on since 2012. I serve on the Board of Trustees here for the library, the Juvenile Prevention Council Board of Directors. What else? There's another one. And I'm a board, Halifax Electric Cooperation, Membership Corporation. I'm one of their Board of Trustees. So I am clerk of my church. Very active in my church. I teach the youth class in my son at my church, so it's a. I do a lot of volunteering. I serve as a board on the board of directors for the senior citizens group here in Warren County as well. So I stay busy.
Okay, very
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
How would you say education has changed around here since you first started teaching? I think
oh gosh.
School, 36 students.
Yes. Now I think the limit is probably is very different in the kindergarten through third grade. You know, I think it's 22 or 23.
Okay.
That's the most for the early grades, but in the upper grades it's probably no more than 25 at that point. But I think it has changed. The children have many more opportunities than what I did when I was, you know, it was just basic curriculum when I was in high school or in school. But now, even in middle school, the children have the opportunity to take high school courses, you know, so that it all depends on which academy they choose to pursue, whether it's the, they have different academies, whether it's the workforce or college prep, those kinds of things. And that I did not have that available, you know, even though when I went to college, I did okay. I did not struggle, but... they had many more opportunities.
Okay.
And I was fortunate enough when I went to school that mom and dad, being farmers, they didn't have a lot of extra money. So I was fortunate enough to have a scholarship that they did not have to pay anything for me while in school. And so, you know, I'm very appreciative of that. The only thing, the things that they did for me, spending money, clothes, and that kind of thing. Did not have a car. I rode the train from Pembroke to Rocky Mount and from Rocky Mount back on Sunday afternoons when I would come home. Mom and Dad would pick me up and then take me back on Sunday afternoon. So that's an experience I'll never forget. You know, kids today, I got to have this car to go to school, but you know,
exactly.
don't have to have that now. So, yeah.
And what challenges would you say have emerged for kids over the years since you started in education? And not just in education, but just, you know, being young people today.
I think one of the challenges, there's not a family. The family doesn't seem to be a family anymore. You know, growing up, my parents and my siblings, we ate, mom cooked breakfast for us before we went to school. She packed our lunch. When we came home, dinner, you know, we ate together. So that has changed. You know, many families don't eat together anymore. They go by Hardee's, McDonald's, fast food. And, you know, that's probably some of the reasons that there are some of the health issues that children may face today because of those kinds of things. But another challenge, I think, is that children have access to too many electronics. Not that I'm against technology, but you know, when even talking to young people today, they're steady using their phone. They can't put the phone down to carry on a decent conversation. And I think the supervision of young people is not what it was when I was growing up. You know, my mom and dad always knew where we were as children. Today, I'm not so sure that parents know that.
And you think kids are getting into stuff?
Because of the kinds of trouble that they may get into, you know. I just think, you know, parent, and I think part of it comes from the fact that some of our parents are so very young. They don't know how to parent.
Mm-hmm.
I was 25 when I had my first child, and you know, I knew nothing about children because, you know, I had a younger brother, 2 years younger than me, and of course, you know, we grew up together. We didn't have to take care of each other. And when I did not know what to do, if I didn't call my doctor, this is going on with Jennifer, Heather, and Natalie, you know, I had an older sister. Manny, tell me what I need to do at this stage of the game with whatever child I was dealing with. Mm-hmm. But parents, many parents today, they don't know how to parent.
I see. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask too, you know, you mentioned the boards you're on, mm-hmm. and all the work you do, and with the education and the senior services center. I guess what motivates you to be so involved and to take that role, those roles?
I just love working and helping people, mm-hmm. Whether it's young people, old people. I always feel that there's something I can do to maybe enhance or make their life better. I just enjoy helping.
That's awesome. Is there anything you would like to see different about this community today, especially in regards to your positions?
I don't know if you know this or not, but Warren County has very few industries.
Okay.
Our working population, many, many of them have to leave the county to find employment. I would love to see more employment here in our county, more industry, more jobs, fact, whatever it might be, just to get the people work at home. That would be one of the things that I would really, really love to see.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we close?
I think that's it.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Mr. Brayboy.
Thank you for inviting me.